This is NPR Illinois. I'm Jamie Dunn. Illinois Issues recently took a look at a new state law that requires high school civics classes cover current and controversial events. Christy Kennedy wrote that story. For it, she talked with several high school civics teachers across the state, including Brett Burton. Burton teaches civics in Beardstown, and several of his students are recent immigrants or come from immigrant families. I caught up with Mr. Burton to hear more about his class.
Beardstown is a very unique community. There's a meat packing plant here, a JBS meat packing plant, which draws in a lot of different groups of people from around, really around the country and outside of the country. So we have a large Latin American Hispanic population. We also have a percentage of the population, maybe not a large percent, but that is from West Africa. So they are native French speakers. I believe there's 13 different languages spoken at our school. That means that I have pretty wide base of, first of all, of language learners. I'll have a class of kids that are born and raised in Beardstown. Their families have lived here. I'll have that. I'll have people who might be first-generation immigrants. Maybe their parents migrated to the United States, so they were born here. They've lived their whole lives here, but their parents weren't from here necessarily. And then I'll have another group of students that are recent immigrants. Maybe they came over with a brother or sister, maybe their family, maybe just them. Some of them are limited English. So that's the first kind of thing we have. We have varying ranges of English comprehension and English skills in general.
And you maybe can't take for granted that the students would maybe know things about civics that kids would maybe know that had lived here all their lives.
Absolutely.
Right?
Students who come from places like the Congo where there's a dictatorship, you can never assume that they understand the principles of a democracy when they come into your class. So a lot of times you kind of have to dial it all the way back to the beginning and start from step one of democracy.
Part of this, new sort of look at civics is discussing current and controversial topics, and we're going through a presidential cycle where adults are having a hard time being civil, talking about some of these things. So how are you handling that in your classroom to make those conversations productive and make all the kids feel comfortable talking about these things?
When I was interviewed earlier about it, I gave all the credit I could to the students and the parents and the administration because, yes, we have some issues with this election that are very hot-button issues that affect literally a student's entire family, speaking specifically about immigration. And then you have other students that maybe don't see that perspective. So I have to give them all the credit because all these conversations that we've had have stayed civil. They have been, I feel, respectful about other opinions. And if it is getting to a point where I think maybe it could be going somewhere it should not be going, then I can usually redirect it and then just continue a productive conversation. But this semester, especially, and last, we've had very good discussions about the issue of immigration. We've watched not all of, but parts of the three debates, as well as the vice president debate. And the general reaction I get from a lot of these students is almost disbelief that they kind of are more interested in personal attacks. The students feel they're interested in personal attacks over facts and information. So it's kind of funny to watch 15, 16-year-old kids that have these feelings, like, how are these adults acting like this? but we always manifest that into something productive. We try to drive home facts. And when something is said, is it factual? Is it true? I have them jot it down, have them go back and look it up. Because I want to make sure that they know that, yes, there's the political game of accusing and name-calling, but also having them focus on the issues and what is actually, going to affect the country. So it's a delicate balance, I'll say that.
Yeah, I've been hearing that a lot from folks, this idea of like news literacy, of teaching the kids how to look into claims that are made and how to make sure that the information they're getting is accurate.
Right.
Can you tell me a little bit about what you all have been doing with that?
I have a very inquisitive group, and they almost expect that a lot of the things they hear aren't truth. For whatever reason, they've come to believe that. So a lot of times we'll just stop and somebody will ask, is that factual? And like I said, we usually have computers. We'll just go back. we'll do some research, find out what perspectives there are on it, especially when it comes to numbers or statistics. And if you remember the one debate between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton spoke specifically about her website and the fact checker. And that was a big draw for my class. They wanted to see the fact checker and what was coming up. I feel like my students do a good job about understanding the importance of the issues, understanding facts and where candidates stand on those issues.
Another part of this civics requirement is actually having students get engaged in some way, be it a mock election or writing to, you know, a representative. Mm-hmm. What are you doing on that front?
It's a mock election that involves, you know, I divide them up into three groups or political parties. That's based on a survey. There's 15 issues and you put how you feel about them. And I try to use that as kind of a compass to put them in three groups. I put them in Republican, Democrat, or Independent. From there, I have them create a campaign, put up posters, campaign slogan. We've made commercials before. I give them the scenario on the last day of the assignment. I show them the Electoral College map. I'll put up a scenario on the board where, you know, each candidate is within a few votes of 270 electoral votes, and, you know, it comes down to Florida, and whoever has the better debate performance wins Florida. And that usually is a lot of fun, and I think pretty productive, because that's something I've found that with all the different responsibilities, it reaches learners of all levels and of all English comprehension levels. The other one we do is at the end of the judicial branch unit, when we talk about juvenile justice, I have students get into groups and create diversion programs or things that could be implemented in our community to sort of divert youth away from crime, which is another good thing for the diverse classroom that I have, is you get a lot of different aspects of different cultures that come up as ideas. We had one idea last year that was African cooking classes, programs to do with sports or music, but I kind of let kids be as creative as they want. If they happen to feel passionately about what they're doing, I'm willing to work with them to see if there's kind of a niche for that in our community. Although we have not yet had one that has caught, you know, because of lack of funding mostly.
And you had a student who asked about protesting, about sitting down during the Pledge of Allegiance, because mm-hmm. he'd presumably seen it happen, seen NFL players do it.
Right.
Can you tell me a little bit about that story?
I could tell when we went for the pledge, he stood up for it, but I could tell he was a little hesitant. And he actually came to me and said, "What happens if a student chooses not to stand for the pledge?" And I said, "That's a very good question. I'll check with the principal." I did. Obviously, there's no rule against it. Kind of what the principal asked is, as long as they're respectful of others viewing the flag, then they are not required to stand. So what I relayed back to that student was that information, but I also said, if you make this choice, you're doing it in an American government class. So I want you to know that if you decide not to stand, you're going to have to be able to support your argument to me. And I said, you can't just do it because Colin Kaepernick did it. You know, I need to know your reason. He said, okay. And the next day he came in and did not stand. And it also just happened to coincide with the day that we talked about the First Amendment and the freedom of speech. So that part actually worked out really well. But the student was able to tell me, you know, I have experienced racism in this country. He told a story about how he went into a store when he was in Chicago over the summer and was followed around the whole time he was there. And he felt like that was because he was a black teenager. He went into detail about some of the other issues, especially with police brutality. He backed up his information. I could tell there was research done, which showed to the rest of the class that if you're going to make a political stand, whether it's in this class or anywhere, don't just do it because that follows along with what the crowd is saying. You should know what you stand for. And in that case, he did.